Welcome everyone to another episode of What Is. I know it's been a while, it's been a couple months, but I haven't been in the country, so it's been hard for me to record these episodes. But I have a really fun one lined up today. We're going to be talking about rock climbing and adventure and just being cool and different in identifying what your passions are. Today on my episode, I have with me Mark Briette. Mark and I actually work at TSG together. We met 4 years ago when I started here, and we've been friends ever since, colleagues ever since. Mark was one of the first people that took me rock climbing, and after that we went for beers because we needed it, because it was a pretty tiring experience for me, and I'm sure a frustrating experience for Mark.
Well, that's frustrating, but I did kind of put you through the ringer a little bit.
I know.
So the point where I think it's been a while since you've been, right?
It has, because I ended up tearing my ACL soon after, and then I was scared to rock climb after that. But we won't talk about that. We'll get back to it eventually. In general, Mark's this vibrant, energetic, smart, nerdy, person that I know who is a consultant just like I am, but in the evenings is a rock climber and a D&D player and a lot of other cool things. But today I think we're going to tap into possibly his rock climbing passion. But before we start there, welcome Mark, welcome to What Is. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Rudy. That is quite an intro. So I appreciate that.
Well,
there's a lot of labels in there.
There are a lot of labels in there, but all of which are true, though, so it totally justifies it. Well, do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself that I probably didn't touch upon, or something that you wanted to tell them?
Yeah, I mean, I think you covered a lot of it. I guess it's kind of funny. I've been like reading this book on Zen recently, and a lot of the stuff that it gets at is about dropping labels. So I guess I'll describe myself in, you know, certain things or people need to be understood as just like as themselves, and that's it. But there are some labels that I still wear. So clearly climber is one of the ones that I'm a little reluctant to give up, as well as, you know, programmer. And like you said, general nerd. I'd say I've met a lot of people, and it's kind of an interesting thing in the climbing community, who wear a lot of the same labels, but in the order in which you acquire them kind of matters, right?
Definitely.
So I think I could pick out a friend of mine, James, who's a really good friend of mine, who has the same kind of programmer, nerd, climber aspect, but he actually got those labels in total reverse. And so in climbing world and in programming world, we have a lot of the same viewpoints, but it's like because he was a climber and then a nerd and then a programmer, and I was kind of a nerd, a programmer, and then a climber.
Yeah.
We do have some like really interesting differences.
Yeah, So like that's cool that you bring that up, because even though you have similar characteristics, the journey you take to get there is what is different, and it connects you, but it also differentiates you from each other.
Exactly.
But talking about journey, can you what got you into climbing? Like what was the first move? Who was your Mark Briette that was like, let's go climbing?
If we want to get real deep with it, it was a little further away and started probably way before I ever went into a climbing gym for the first time. It's probably two things that kind of go into it. Is one, I had a real rambunctious set of friends growing up, which is kind of weird. So I was kind of like the nerdier friend amongst a bunch of athletes. After like 5 years of t-ball as a kid and baseball, I was like, all right, athletics, not my thing. I just sold it off as like, oh, I wasn't born for this kind of stuff. So I didn't really do much physically as a kid, but I ended up in high school and middle school, thankfully, getting with a group of friends who were a rambunctious bunch of runners and athletes. And when you're like a runner or an athlete in high school, you understand something like that gives you like this bulletproof sense that you're like, I can outrun any cop.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Was your motivation?
That was my friend's motivation.
Okay.
That was my friend's motivation.
Okay.
Was that they were like, I can outrun or outmaneuver any cop, which means as a kid, you're also a minor. So in the U.S., that kind of means you can get away with anything.
Right.
Thankfully, yeah.
No one tested that thing, but yeah.
I was going to say, or you can test it. Yeah, and I mean, that's true of white suburbs. But totally different yeah. discussion. Anyway, so we have a bunch of people who think they're bulletproof, big, strong, beautiful, strong people.
Mm-hmm.
And then me, who is this bookish, bone-thin nerd trying to keep up with them. And right. so, of course, you know, they're pulling out all the stops in the book, jogging 3 miles to get away from a cop.
Yeah.
Hey, I bet we could climb that building. And it's like, well, won't we get in trouble for that? It's like, nobody's going to climb up there and catch us. Like, have you looked at the cops in this town? They're a little doughy.
Yeah.
And so a lot of where my passion for, like, climbing started with just trying to keep up with my friends who were athletic
and getting into
shenanigans, whether it was climbing on the playground or climbing buildings, climbing trees to kind of dip and dodge and get away from people.
Did not think that's where that came from, but it makes sense. I mean, now those photos of you climbing lampposts makes all the sense.
Well, and it's way more fun, too, when you're not struggling to keep up, when you're like, oh, I could do this.
There's
like a, you know, now that I could do it, and it's one of the things that drew me to it when I first started climbing, was like, I had this, like, profound sense of freedom that maybe is a little weird in a lot of people's minds, like, especially living in a city. I could just, like, look around, and I was like, if I wanted to, I could just get out of the situation. I could be halfway up that building, like, if I wanted to, right?
It's an escape of sorts, I guess.
If you need to escape, or if you just wanted to go see what was up there.
Yeah.
And so it was, like, kind of empowering. But, yeah, it started a lot just trying to keep up with my friends.
Yeah, and, that's fair.
And, like, I, you know, when my dad had that phase of, like, we're going to toughen you up and you're going to work out, I was like, I just want to be able to do pull-ups. So, you know, this was way before I started climbing.
Yeah.
But I got a little bit of the muscle base that you needed, and being really thin and wiry, like 6 foot and, you know, taking stabs at just over 100 pounds.
Right.
Like, that's a really good, not athletic.
Climbing physique.
Not athletic at all, but that skeleton works well on the wall.
That works well on the walls. Fair enough. So I guess, so you started climbing or got into climbing at that age just to keep up with your athletic friends.
Yeah.
But did you get into a gym when you were in college or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was in college, and that's where it kind of changes and becomes, you know, that was all good fun,
shenanigans.
But I think where it really becomes like an important part of my life, I would say, is in college.
Mm-hmm.
So the last year that I was in school at Purdue University, they had just finished construction on their gigantic gym, and in there was a climbing wall.
Nice.
And, you know, it was thanks to a friend of mine, our senior year, and myself, we're both going through, you would want to call it a breakup, but it's college, and college is weird. Let's just say girl troubles. Me and one of my roommates, shout out to Dom, were going through girl troubles simultaneously. And so we were, you know, both more on the nerdy spectrum, if we go back to the story of I was a nerd and a programmer first. And, you know, something about this was just extra profound. We couldn't shake it off by sitting in our dorm rooms and playing video games
the
until
real
late
heartbreak.
Hours.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. It was the kind of heartbreak that made you break your habits and do weird stuff.
Do your things, okay.
So more or less, we end up at this climbing wall, which I look at, and, you know, I'd been to a climbing wall before with all my rambunctious friends, but this was the first time I was like, okay, let's try this.
Yeah.
So we started bouldering, and it was just immediately fun.
Yeah,
I think for like the mindset of a programmer, and this is an interesting thing that maybe talk about later, but that I think climbing is a lot of things to a lot of people, and what you're going to latch on to first is really dependent on where you come from. So I was a programmer, so I immediately saw bouldering, which is shorter climbing over pads. If we want to make the analogy, it's kind of, if you're climbing a route, which is typically what you think of with the tall setup and the ropes and all that, that's kind of like distance running or running a marathon, whereas bouldering, you know, short, difficult moves over pads is kind of like sprinting.
Got it.
But it's also like puzzle solving, which is what immediately latched onto it for me. And, you know, I'm still this like wiry kid, even in college, with not at all athletic, but it kind of clicks in my head that, like, oh, if I figure out the right way to move my body, it doesn't matter that I'm athletic. I can just kind of reach things and hang on just enough to finish this really short problem.
Yeah. So the first time you went climbing, I remember the first time I went climbing with you, we were there for 3 hours, and I didn't even realize it had been 3 hours.
Yeah.
I was like, it's been 3 hours? What is going on here?
Yeah.
And you were like, yeah, that's what it had. This all-knowing face, you're nodding, you're like, yeah, duh, dude.
Yeah.
So what was that, the same, profound experience you had?
Exactly the same. Yeah. It's funny that, I get to give that face to everyone because I lived it. And then I've loved climbing so much that I've taken people and then watched so many people go through that. We finished that first day, and I don't even think we tried more than 4 or 5 different problems. Mm-hmm. You know, the wall was small.
Yeah.
By, today's, mega gym standards.
Right.
And, we weren't very strong. We were climbing V0s and maybe stabbing at V1s.
Yeah.
And we had only been to, 3 or 4 problems, and we worked them the whole night. And we were like, oh, my God, it's been 4 hours. And then I was like, well, let's go. And I went to tie my shoes, and I didn't have any strength in my fingers left to tie my shoes. I couldn't pinch my shoelaces.
Yeah. No,
and so, that first magical time, I think, it has a tendency to be really similar for everybody.
That's how for the lack of a better word, addiction starts, and you just keep climbing and climbing.
Oh, no, it's an addiction. I think I've often referred to it as the most positive addiction that's in my life.
Right. And since I've known you, you said that you've also had, knee problems and other injury related to the legs and the body.
Yeah.
And somehow climbing doesn't aggravate those things. Is there something special about climbing that prevents you from injuring these things? Why is it so much better for you than just going and lifting weights or running a marathon or something of that sort?
Yeah, I think there's two answers. There's the very general answer that I think applies to everybody. There's an answer that applies kind of to me specifically, as well as anyone who, comes from a less athletic background. So the general of why it's going to be easier on your knees than lifting or running especially, is that it's not, if you're doing it right, it's not impact driven. You're not jumping and, hitting the ground really hard with your knee. If you're climbing right, it's still the same level of muscle exertion, but it's very slow and controlled. Mm. It's more akin to doing a one-legged squat is the hardest you're going to be pushing on your legs, rather than repetitive motion always in the same spot, which is typically either you wear down your knees running distance from repetitive motion, or in cutting sports like basketball where you have the sideways knee joint. And in climbing, the variety of movement is such that you're not necessarily going to get the repetitive strain on your knees. And then you're usually not doing violent enough moves, again, if you're doing it right and you're in the right headspace, that you're going to, hurt your knees in the way that you do with cutting sports like football or basketball or something.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I was not very athletic growing up and kind of had, probably more people would know of scoliosis a little bit, and also pectus excavatum, which is a caved-in chest in regular words.
Okay.
Which is a deformity that affects 1 in 100 people. But the reason that I got knee injuries when I was running a lot was because of asymmetries. In that, if you could think of scoliosis more easily, if your spine's curved to one way, you're going to favor one leg, and you're almost always going to hurt that knee.
Right.
And because there's really one, a good way to run, or a small family of this is good running
technique. Yeah.
If your body's twisted up and bent, you're not athletic, you've got some kind of deformity. If you're trying to run fast, you're eventually going to wear yourself down.
Correct.
Whereas climbing was really nice, and I actually gravitated toward climbing as well because I had hurt my knees in college running.
Right.
Climbing was really nice in that it kind of lets you succeed and work at the problem in a way that works for your body.
Mm.
You're very much encouraged to, you want to round out your weaknesses, but you're encouraged to lean into your strengths. Sure, I had, goofy knees and a weird spine.
Right.
But I also had, this long bony body that was useful. And even later in climbing, I found ways that I could use the weird idiosyncrasies of my body to actually climb better than some of my friends who were athletic.
That's a very interesting point because, yeah, I've also noticed when I go to a climbing gym, nobody looks the same. Like, you know, there's no, like, a like a defined structure of this is what a climber looks like of sorts. Like, you know, like, I've seen people that are really short that can do really, like, that can scale boulders like it's no problem at all. And I've seen long, tall people that struggle with it, you know? So it's like... Like, you figure out what technique works for you. There's, like, some common practices, but there's no, like, defined structure to it of sorts.
Right. At the end of the day, you have to like, figure out what works for your body. Right. And I think the coolest thing in climbing right now is it's in a space where it hasn't yet been, like, optimized, like, you know, running or basketball, certainly.
Right.
We know height is better, and you need to be tall to play basketball. There's no real rules for what it is to be good at rock climbing. And a lot of the best rock climbers, if you were to just look at them, just look like normal people. They're not, like, ripped power lifters. You know, you could have somebody sitting next to you on the train who looks really normal but crushes 5'14 or something.
Right, definitely. So is rock climbing not a good, like, exercise for somebody that's, like, looking to get, like, a good-looking body? Or is like, you know, like, people like, I want to work out and I want to...
Well, you're not thinking about taking your veiny forearms when you're thinking about doing your glamour muscles. Yeah, no, I mean, that's a pretty legitimate question.
Right.
And yeah, like, if you're looking to get gigantic pecs, like, that's not what climbing is about. But what I will say is, for me, especially somebody who's been unathletic and, to be quite honest, was never super motivated to work out. Like, I just didn't sink into weightlifting or running the way a lot of people do. I look way better than I used to when I started climbing. Like, you know, I'm not sitting around like Mr. Guns, right?
Right.
Like, sitting across from you, but I look good. Right?
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
And so, like, especially when I think about what I, like, you know, deformed, unathletic me before I started climbing. So I think, you know, it's not going to give you the glamour muscles, but what I would say for in favor of climbing is it's fun enough that you won't think of it as, like, a job. And so in that respect, for some people trying to get fit, that works better.
Right. It gets you fit. It gives you that physical fitness instead of the glamour muscles, as you said.
Right. And it's, in, at least for me and some other people who I know who've gotten into it, compared to regular working out, it's effortless.
Right.
Just because it's fun.
Fun.
So I guess, you know, if you're going for the upper level Adonis, maybe not. But if you want to look good and feel good about yourself, climbing's great.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. I know you've taken it outside the gym, and a lot of rock climbers do. They go to Colorado, they go to different mountains, different rocks, and start bouldering it or lead climbing it or anything of that sort. How did that start happening, and is that more fun, maybe? Because it's, like, natural and it's not, like, actually a route that most people, like, can see what the holes are.
I think there's a lot of that, and I actually have to return all the way back to the first question now when I said there's probably two things that got me into climbing and are into why. One of it was chasing my friends around, but the other one was just that when I was young, my dad loved taking me camping and outdoors, right? So I have kind of a natural love of the outdoors, even though, you know, I've lived in Chicago most of my life and, like, in or around the city. I'm a true city rat as a person, but still love the outdoors.
Yeah.
And so for me, the outdoor component of climbing is, like, super important. Like, that's the best. That's the goal for me, is to spend a weekend where I have nothing to worry about but being outside in nature and then trying hard on a route. Like, that just sounds great. But of course, that's my thing. And this is kind of a thing climbing's going through in general right now as it gets popular. You have all these mega gyms and you have, like, climbing competitions that are starting to get televised. I think we just got a deal with ESPN.
Nice.
And so for a lot of people, the climbing gym is climbing, right? And so, you know, there are a lot of people who put, you know, no importance on outside. I enjoy the great outdoors, but I also think it could be totally legitimate for your climbing life to live in the gym. Like, being in the gym trying hard is the same as going outside trying hard in a lot of ways. And I think that's just, like, a question that climbing in general is, like, asking itself right now.
Is it the same, though? Because, like, in a gym, somebody is making those, like,
holes. Somebody is figuring out there is a route to finish these things. But outside, you're not making these holes. You're not really, you're looking for anything that can be a hole. You know, there's like a whole different like puzzle, for the lack of a better word over there. You know, like you're also, you don't have like a rope already in there. You know, like you have to, the first person that goes up kind of has to set their own path and then put the rope up there for the others. Like
there's a lot of questions. And I think that's, so well, some of the distinctions that I would draw there is that, sure, Mother Nature is just kind of doing things randomly. But not to dump on any of our local setters here in Chicago, but sometimes Mother Nature on a bad day still puts something better together than, you know, somebody trying to put up a route.
Exactly.
You know, randomness sometimes puts up the best movement. But one thing that's probably not super obvious to somebody who hasn't done a lot of outside commute or climbing is that there's a very much an art to making a route outdoors. Because, right, nobody's in there chipping holds, which is a terrible thing. We don't want that in the climbing community. Yeah. Not, you know, making, what I'm referring to is like stabbing or chipping away at natural rock to create some kind of climb. Yeah. Or even there was an old practice of people gluing on rock to add holds. Like, we don't want to do that to nature, at least in my school of thought.
Yeah.
But when you pick a line to bolt outside, there's a lot, very much the same way as your setters indoors have a lot of things going in their head. There's people outdoors who can look at a natural formation and be like, that's going to be a great rock climb. Mm. There's some people who I'm very fortunate to climb and be around in Kentucky who do a lot of bolting at the Red River Gorge. And those people can just look and know, hey, this is going to be a route. And they can pick out quality routes. There's a skill very similar to route setting in just being able to find a line, so to speak. And when you talk about like these top level athletes in climbing who are outside, they're in the very weird space where they're looking for something that is just barely possible to climb.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, that would be a good climb, but also so hard that no one else can probably
do it. Right. Which I guess brings me really well to my next question I was going to ask you. I'm forgetting his name, but there was this guy, he climbed all the three mountains in Yosemite in one day.
Alex Honnold, probably.
Yes, Alex Honnold. Yeah, so that's insane, because I've seen those rocks, and those don't look like climbable rocks. And is that just because, is that technique, is that skill, is that, like, to him, does he look at that and like, oh, that's a good route, you know? Like,
I think Alex Honnold is an interesting case where he would probably say it's mostly technique. He, even though he's kind of the face of climbing right now, he would describe himself as not a very talented climber.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he would. Well, because he's talking, for record, reference, he compares himself to Chris Sharma, who, long hair, yelling, he was kind of, you know, the head of climbing previously.
Okay.
And he was just a freak of nature strong. Like, you talk about a talented athlete. Yeah. He put up routes at age, you know, 15, 16 outside that Alex Honnold self-admits he could not climb today.
Right.
Like, that's talent in Alex Honnold's mind. What he does with in Yosemite is a lot of practice and diligence. Now he has a lot more mental fortitude than Chris Sharma, which is a totally different thing.
Right.
But, yeah, he wouldn't consider himself talented. So I would say a lot of it is hard-earned technique over a lot of time.
Got it.
And he is, like, a regular in Yosemite.
So he
knows those routes like the back of his hand, probably.
That makes sense. So do you ever try to aspire to be like them? Or is that, like, just like, oh, they're awesome. I'm never going to be there. For me, it's just fun, and I'm going to do what I can do to the best of my ability. Is there, like, goals that, like, I want to be there or something?
I have a huge... This is actually a really great question.
Yeah.
Because, like, I have a huge mental disconnect in that, like, my mom, and I get this from her, is, like, a very very much a dreamer in her goals. She's very head in the clouds, like, I'm going to be the best. Or, you know, she would look at her kids and go, you're going to be a rock star.
Right.
And I'm kind of, that's kind of how my goals are set. So yeah, in a way I would love to climb, you know, toward the top of the climbing spectrum or what it is now, like 514, probably never 515, but at least 514 in my lifetime. Like, that's my goal on one level. But I'm also not climbing for a living, right?
Right.
Like, there comes a point where it's hard to achieve certain things if you're not climbing for a living. And it's cool because a lot of like podcasts and different media and climbing is targeted. How do you get as high on that grade spectrum as you can mm-hmm. while being a normal person?
Right.
And so a lot of the discussion with my, or, you know, formulation of my goals is like, how far can I get, you know, without, you know, living in a van or anything?
Right.
It's a beautiful dream. Like,
it's a beautiful dream.
But that's just like not the trajectory my life's
right.
on right
no.
now. So I want to, you know, get as far as I can and high and strong and all of that stuff.
Right.
But
it's still a passion and a hobby and not your way of life. Or
right. But yeah. But climbing is like this inherently obsessive thing. It attracts and rewards obsessive.
Yeah.
Obsessive behavior. So I have to try and continue to strive for it, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going, but it needs to kind of live
right.
in harmony with everything else in my life. Whereas, you know, we work the same company in Chicago in the city.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to try and leave and climb out of a van for 4 months, that would probably have, that wouldn't be harmony. Right?
No, it would not. That makes sense. So I guess, have you, while climbing, since you do climb often now and inside, outside, all these things, have you had any accidents? Like, have you fallen down? Or have you, minor ones, major ones, what is, like, is there one in particular that sticks out? Like, or a couple, maybe?
Oh, that's a great question for me. So, I would probably freaked out a lot of belayers when I was a younger climber. So, belaying is, for the record, when you're a rope climber,
mm-hmm.
the person on the ground who is basically supposed to catch you with the rope
yep.
Is your belayer. So that's the person tasked with keeping you safe. And when you're doing lead climbing, which is the type that you kind of alluded to that you typically do outside,
mm-hmm.
where all of the rope starts at the bottom and you're clipping to points as you go up.
Right.
Particularly when you're lead climbing, you can give your belay partner does have your life and well-being in their hands. And, you know, there's ways that if you're acting shady and you're the climber, you could be putting your belayer in a situation where they're like, ah, there's nothing I can do. Like, you're just kind of being dangerous.
Right.
So, unfortunately, because I wasn't very athletic or coordinated, I think I gave a lot of my early belayers heart attacks.
That,
and
like,
I would say that I'm very lucky nothing more happened.
Okay.
I've never been seriously injured from outdoor climbing.
Yeah.
But I've had what are called some close calls.
I can pause it. Okay, yeah, we're back.
Okay. Sorry, brief interruption from, and shout out to my lovely climbing partner and girlfriend, Natalia.
Yep.
Who interrupted. She was like, are you talking about yourself? So yeah, I never was injured from a fall, but you would never know that by my early belayers. So
okay. So you were lucky in the sense that you weren't actually hurt, but like your mm-hmm. belayers were like, dude,
yeah,
don't do that.
Yeah. So like one notable thing when you're like, have you ever hit the ground? Is I did what's called soft decking on a particular outdoor route. So lots of terminology coming in. Decking would be as in to hit the deck.
Right.
Which would be when you're lead climbing, if at any point the good part of a lead fall would be if you fall, the rope catches you and you are gently, you know, kind of just hovering from the rope in the air.
Yeah.
What it is to deck is to fall and actually contact the ground.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, this, you know, that's where people probably immediately get like sirens in their head. And it's hard to kind of describe or make it felt, but that's not always a bad thing. Sometimes that can even be expected.
Right.
Because what happened, and soft deck in particular, what happened to me was I was two clips on a climb. So
mm-hmm.
outdoor, you probably every 5 or so feet have a clip or like a checkpoint where you're clipping in your rope.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to climb past your last checkpoint to hit the next one. So I am two clips up, 10 feet up. And so I have to pull out, basically, if you imagine, another, you know, 5 to 7 feet of slack to get to the next one.
Yeah.
So if you imagine, not only am I falling that 5 to 7 feet, if I fall going for clip three,
you're
going to
fall all the way down.
Yep. Because I have 7 feet of slack out,
right.
So you fall twice. So typically lead climbing, the second to third clip is the scariest part for the belayer, because you're in a zone where if they fall while trying to clip that, they're going to hit the ground. Mm-hmm. It's just the math of how much rope is out.
Yeah.
And so that's the part where if you want to not make the same mistakes as young me and be a sketchy climber, if you want to put your belayer at ease, you don't go for that clip unless you're very certain you're solid.
Gotcha.
But I, on one occasion, kind of was trying to clip the third clip and was a little unsure of my hand, or I didn't even remember being unsure of my hand, which was maybe the problem. But I pulled out the slack to reach up and clip, and as I got toward the checkpoint, the hand that I was still holding onto the rock with just kind of slipped off. And so my belayer at that point pulled in as much slack as they could in the instant before I fell. And I kind of was caught by the rope, but due to the rope stretches so that you have a more comfortable catch, I actually elongated, and I just kind of like plopped on the ground, right? So it was a 15-foot fall, but because the rope was absorbing some of the fall, I was already catching on the rope, even though I hit the ground. I hit the ground very gently.
Okay.
And I was just kind of, because I didn't even expect my hand to pop off, I was just kind of still like staring at my hand in disbelief, and I was like, why am I sitting? It was an instant.
Right.
And huge shout out to my belayer and friend Nicole in that scenario, because it was a perfect catch. I hit the ground, but I was not at all injured.
Yeah. So that was lucky. That was awesome that like you haven't had like major injuries while climbing, although scaring your belayers when you were young.
Well, I have had injuries. Now, the injuries are more due to probably training than anything.
Okay, but not like actually like falling down or anything of that sort. But like when you're climbing, you can hurt your muscles or something of that sort when you're trying something.
That's a lot more common with what you would see with climbing injuries.
Right.
Even for people who climb outside would be due to training or overuse.
Got it. You posted once in our chat, TC Climbing channel, that like climbing can be dangerous. Like people have lost their lives or their limbs because of a bad fall, because of just climbing in the rain or something of that sort. When that happens, how does the climbing community or yourself even react to that? Like, do you look at that as it happens, or do you look at that as like, let's learn from that, or do you look at that as like, that was a dumb move?
It's always a question. There's not an answer to it. And it's actually funny that you bring that up, because yesterday was actually the birthday of a friend of mine who passed away last year in a climbing accident.
Right.
And last year was a rough year, because not only did I have that happen, but I also had a friend who was seriously injured, broke his back, taking a large fall and just an accident, basically, not a soft deck, a rather hard deck.
Yeah.
And in each case, I think the climbing community does a very good job of coming together to kind of be there for one another. Because my friend Savannah Buick, who passed away last year, I think was a very vocal and very vibrant member of the climbing community.
Right.
Touched a lot of people in a very special way. And so I think when she passed away, there was, you know, a good coming together from that, and an acknowledgement and help of causes she was a champion for. Project Heal, for example, which helps people with eating disorders. And I think the other important thing that kind of happens in that instance especially, it makes you reflect on what you're doing. Always serves as a good reminder that what we're doing is dangerous.
Right.
Because when you're out there for your first couple times, you're going to be really like tight and worried, and that's the exact right mindset, right? Is that you need to be concerned with your own safety and all that. But, you know, as you become a pro who's been climbing for 5, 6, 7 years and you get lazy, that's when mistakes happen.
Right.
Or in Savannah's case, it just sounded like a freak thing. And that's the one that hurts the most, is when there's not an answer of, there's not an answer of, you know, he should have done this with his gear. Okay, let's all be cognizant of that going forward. It was just a freak thing. There's definitely always an analysis of what could we have done differently.
Right.
And maybe in her case, it was just not climb that day.
That's got to be hard. But
speaking about the community as a in general, Chicago seems to be having a much more thriving climbing community. Like, I, as you said, a lot of mega gyms are opening up. First Ascent opened up right under our office. So is it because people that climb are just so in love with the sport that they're starting things on their own? Or is there, you go the first time, you just can't stop, and like the demand's increasing? Like, what is this trend that's starting up with rock climbing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of speaks to what I was talking about earlier, where it appeals to a lot of people for a lot of different reasons. And FA is actually kind of like an interesting case study, right? Because there have always been small climbing gyms here and there. And FA, for this, for a while before it opened, First Ascent, was almost kind of a running joke in these smaller climbing gyms. It was like everyone was scoffing, like, oh, it's, yeah, sure, that's going to open. It was like, oh, we're going to open next year. We've got a lot. And then nothing would happen. Everyone would be like, oh, okay, climbing will never get that big. Like,
right, right.
Well, we can keep dreaming, but...
It won't get that.
So,
yeah.
So when I first started living in Chicago, living and working in Chicago, there were only, you know, smaller climbing gyms and different, you know, these smaller climbing gyms. But it's been really as... in like the last 2 or 3 years that they've popped up and been successful,
yeah.
Which just drives more and more of them to pop up.
Because
I think it's having, you know, in these smaller gyms, you had the people who just tried it out by happenstance and kind of liked it. Or you have what we lovingly refer to as like the old crusties, the people who've been going outdoors for years and we're going to climb no matter what. But as you have more of these gyms open, more people get exposed to it. And it just grows the sport.
Coming to the close of time, so I have like a last couple of questions for you.
Sure.
My first penultimate question is, what has been your favorite climbing experience? Like, was it when you went to, I know, it's hard because you climb a lot, but I know you went on this cool trip to Greece and you climbed over there, and those pictures look freaking fabulous. So I have to ask, like, what is, like, is it Red River Gorge? Is it Greece? Is it indoors?
I'm going to jump around. I'm gonna dodge doing the favorite, but you mentioned Greece, so I'm gonna tell you one of the best climbing locales that I've experienced, and it's not just because the climbing is fantastic, it's the whole experience of it. It's an island in Greece called Kalymnos.
Okay.
So it's an island in the Greek Sea, very off the beaten path as far as a tourist destination, but also well established because climbers have been going there for years. It's this town where you'll get an apartment or a studio on, which is like 2 minutes away from the beach and like 15 to 30 minutes hike away from amazing climbing. And it's just this whole beautiful experience. Like, the people there are amazing. The food there is amazing.
Yeah.
And the climbing there is amazing. So it was really cool this last year to go there and just kind of like disappear into this like little climbing world where you wake up, you see, you know, like your local supermarket guy or the same restaurant guy every morning.
Yeah.
Just like grab your coffee and then walk off to the crag. Like, it's a dream life.
Right.
So that's pretty amazing. I think topping out, oh man, I have too many of these. Topping out in Telendos, which is the island that overlooks Kalymnos, there's a gigantic, kind of think Yosemite style, but obviously not nearly that big.
Right.
Just this gigantic rock formation rising out of the sea. Me and my girlfriend did a X-pitch climb up the side of it that took all day. And then you get up there and it's just this plateau that looks like it's untouched by human hands. And then we had like a very type 3 fun, which is where like it's miserable when you're doing it. It's miserable when you're remembering it, the memory of it. But like, it's kind of fun in retrospect. Like 5 hour hike down.
Oh.
But
okay.
That's because we weren't experienced at hiking. The hikes, actually.
Okay.
So that's beautiful. But topping out on something as simple as like a desert tower in Utah, which is like, imagine exactly what it sounds like, just a tower of sandstone. And when you get to the top of it, you stand on the top of it, you've summited it, and then you look around in Arches National Park, and there's literally nothing around you for miles except these gigantic arches, and you're like standing on the same level as them.
That sounds awesome.
And having a huge fear of heights, like...
Wait, you have a fear of heights?
Absolutely.
And you climb?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes, I do. It's been a great way if you're looking to face down your fear of heights or work with that. It's great.
Huh.
It never goes away, but it gets better.
Nice.
But yeah, like I was huddled and it was windy because you're just on the top. You're the only thing in a while.
Yeah.
And standing on the top, you're above your like last piece of protection. So it would be this nasty swing that would be probably fine. But I'm just like on my hands and knees, like I can't stand up. I've always had poor balance. I'm going to get blown over by the wind. But like standing up was just this most triumphant moment.
That's awesome.
And then one last one, we're giving the top three, is I worked on a climb about the first year after I moved here. I worked on a climb at the Red River Gorge called Rochambeau for 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
And I had never sent it. And I just kept coming back and working it. I would come back once or twice a season at least, give it more focused burns. But the day, and it was like an unexpected day, that I finally ascended that climb was insane. Having worked at something for that long and being like, that'll never happen. Like to getting my first 12A was just like awesome.
That's awesome.
So there, top three.
I cheated the best.
I
know I said the last two questions, but you mentioned something there that I want to kind of touch upon.
Yeah.
So, Natalia and you, your girlfriend, did you guys, like, get more, like, because you work, like, started working together and everything, you knew each other's friends, but did you guys fall in love while climbing? Like, was that how it happened?
I think climbing was in the mix. Okay. I mean, I think falling in love was already a complex thing.
Right.
But I think climbing helps. In a lot of ways, good climbing partners have a lot of the same characteristics of good significant others. I think that doesn't mean you should, you know, force your significant other to be a climber or only be interested in people who are climbers, but there's a lot of overlap there.
Right.
So I think that helps.
It definitely helps. Yeah. Okay, cool. I just wanted to touch that for a second. But last question for you. We've spoken a lot about you and about how you got into climbing. But there are a lot of people out there that are listening to this that haven't climbed before or have climbed once and never gone back to climbing, you know? What would be like one piece of advice or one like something you want to share with them that would enable them to like maybe go back out there and climb? Like you sharing that you are scared of heights and you still climb was really cool.
Yeah.
But like what is something that you want to tell them that would make them like that would I guess be a cool thing they should know about climbing that would make them want to go climb or something? You know?
Yeah. I mean you just work it into your life. Like that's the most important thing is like and that's why I get you and other people to climb is like at the end of the day climbing is great, but on another level climbing is just hanging out with my friends. I wouldn't have stuck with it so long if I hadn't been climbing in the very beginning in college with my friend Dom. Like on another level it was just kind of how we hung out.
Right.
You know, it's been a really positive addiction in my life. Then it's most of it is really fun to share with people.
Mm-hmm.
And what you'll find if you talk to other people at the gym is the other really attractive thing about it is that the community as a whole is generally really positive. I think it's made me a more positive person.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I could talk for ages about
how much you love
how much I love climbing and how you should get into it and all that.
Right.
Just embrace the positive community of climbing and mix it with your own. That works. You want to make it your own.
Make it your own. Well, thank you, Mark,
for joining us on this episode of What Is and just sharing your experience with climbing, sharing your stories, sharing your heart with us, and just being this like vibrant torch holder for climbing, I guess.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rudrin. And thanks for all those compliments. I'll earn some.
Sounds good. Thank you. And that was Mark Briette, and that wraps up our episode on What is Rock Climbing. I had a lot of fun doing it, and I hope you had a lot of fun listening to it. Well, hopefully the next episode's going to be in the next week or two, and it'll be another fun episode. Stay tuned, stay listening. If you have any suggestions for me on how I could get better at doing this, let me know. And if there are any topics or interviewees you would like me to interview, let me know as well. This is your host Rudra signing off. Thank you and have a great day.